This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he is every single week, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, I'm very glad to have you here with me today, and not Rom, who tried to muscle his way onto the show.
Oh my gosh, Chris, he's still outside my door just going, Moogie! I want to talk about Moogie! I'm like, oh, Rom, please go have a beer at Quark's or Snail Juice and stop bothering me.
Now, you mean a root beer, right?
That too. Whatever it takes. A root beer, a Snail Juice, a Sluggo Cola, anything. You know, maybe some Toot Grubs, some nice fresh chilled Toot Grubs, you know, pre-chewed. I mean, goodness.
The ones that he picked from the cellar by hand.
Right, exactly.
Well, I did get rid of him. However, Matthew, the way I did it is I told him that we would talk about Moogie ourselves.
Oh, today. Okay. Yeah, well, that's better than having Rom around outside the door. So.
Yeah, that's true. Now, you know, on the next show, we'll be coming back around to our discussion of the final chapter, part 4, The Changing Face of Evil. So it's going to be a big, deep discussion. It's probably going to be another one of those long shows like we did last time when we talked about the final chapter. So this week, I thought it would be fun to do a follow-up, sort of a post-Mother's Day fun show, and a shorter one as well, and just talk about Moogie, whose real name, of course, is Ishka, Quark and Rom's mother.
Well, Chris, it is fun. You know, we had Mother's Day and had a good Mother's Day with my own mom and my sister, who is a mom as well. And so it was enjoyable. We cooked them dinner, my brother-in-law and I, and you know, of course, gave them presents and helped take care of things for them around the house and made them feel loved and whatnot. And so, yeah, it's a good time to talk about Star Trek's probably one of their most famous mothers, and especially in Deep Space Nine, Moogie. We definitely were as heck not going to talk about Keiko.
Well, we talked about her last week and the way she fell into a lens flare, right?
Yeah, which was my favorite part about Keiko, is when she fell into a lens flare.
Well, of course, Star Trek's most famous mother would probably be Lwaxana Troi. Right.
And or Beverly Crusher.
Well, or Beverly Crusher. Yeah. Yeah. But of course, Beverly is part of the crew. So
that's true.
A
yes,
mother,
that's
but
true.
Not
yes.
Like a guest appearance.
Yes.
By others. We don't get a whole lot of mothers appearing regularly on Star Trek other than Lwaxana. So Moogie was an interesting addition to DS9. And after the Next Generation's portrayal of women and equal rights, you know, it was written in a time where there was a lot of movement in women's rights, which was great. But the portrayal of it on the screen was, for me, a little bit odd sometimes. You know, Troi and Beverly, they didn't really get a lot to do. I don't think that they really broke much new ground in terms of new roles for women on the show. And then you get these weird episodes like Angel One, where they go to a planet where the message almost is as bad as a society dominated by men. They just flip it on its head, which I felt really didn't do a whole lot for the conversation. So DS9 changed that, and in a strange, unexpected way, by using the Ferengi.
Yeah, it was really interesting to be able to do that, and obviously in a way that's much more in your face. Yeah. Because the Ferengi are very much a one for one for the Western world,
of present day,
exactly
at the time it was written. Yeah,
and even now, I mean, the Western world hasn't changed all that much from when Deep Space Nine was on the air. And so
yeah.
Now, we do allow our women to wear clothes, that's not something we deal with. And also, we don't make them chew up our food for us and these kind of things. Thankfully. So they really do take it to the nth degree and kind of ridiculousness. And yet, the idea of subjugating somebody just because they're of a different gender really is brought to the forefront here.
Yeah.
And it's good. There's no reason to do this to anyone. And I like that they dealt with it here on Deep Space Nine in such a just kind of a fun, goofy, kind of lighthearted way. And yet they really are driving at the heart of some things that not just inequality, but I think devaluing of women in general. I mean, which... As we look today with some serious issues like, say, the sex trade and those kind of things that are still happening all over the world, that has to do with the devaluing of women as well. And so I think it's ever important that we be discussing these type of issues. And like you said, very strange place to do it with the Ferengi and with Ishka here.
Yeah, people think of the Ferengi as just being... comic relief on DS9. I mean, they think of them being this crazy, wild animals from The Last Outpost, who then became sort of just kind of a devious thorn in the side of Picard throughout most of the rest of the Next Generation. And of course, they do kidnap Troy and Lwaxana at one point. But then you get to DS9, and they do provide the lighthearted episodes and the comic relief in what is mostly a very serious and a very deep series. But what they do here, Ishka's interesting to me because it's really easy to dismiss Mugi as, you know, a character that you almost don't like right off the bat, right? Because most people don't like the Ferengi. I hear people all the time tell me that they skip the Ferengi episodes when they rewatch DS9. And now here you get Quark and Rom's mother, and then in many of the episodes, you get her paired up with the Grand Nagus Zek, who is also a very annoying character. And I'm waiting for you to do your Grand Nagus Zek imitation here, Matthew.
Quack!
I love the way he laughs.
Oh my gosh, it's terrible.
Of course, you and I had the idea for the CBS Consumer Products Zek ringtone, which we talked about here on the show on the other side of the world. Yes.
Yeah.
And I don't even remember what episode it was now, but I do remember that our entire conversation is tacked onto the end of that episode after the end music finishes. Yes.
Yeah. Chris, it is a really strange thing to take Ishka and make her something that has something to say, because like you said, you do end up with her and Zach and all these kind of storylines where she's really having such a huge impact on the Ferengi culture. And you know, Chris, I think one of the most interesting things about it is that, you know, Idik and the idea that infinite diversity and infinite combinations and that we shouldn't judge any culture, you know, we should let them do their thing. And, you know, that's very TNG. But in Deep Space Nine, it's a little bit different in the sense that the Ferengi are never portrayed as being good, like their culture.
Yeah.
You know, it's always portrayed in a derogatory form. And hence having somebody like Ishka come in and really even accentuate that.
Yeah.
The fact that they're somebody who's, I mean, the fact that a female would make profit and then would, not only does she have to give a full confession, but she'd have to worry about being, you know, sold into indentured servitude.
Right.
To repay her, you know, the you horrors know, of society that she had created. Yeah. And, you know.
What's interesting is that she doesn't want to overturn the bad aspects of Ferengi society that we see. She just wants women to be able to carry out the same scheming and underhanded life that the men do.
Yeah, and I think that's the one of the most interesting things. She just wants women to be able to have the same opportunities that
right.
men do.
Yeah.
And so it's not about overturning the government or how things work or those kind of reforms that Rom will later enact is we'll see if you read the books how Ferenginar changes. So that's a really interesting thing is that's not what she's after. She's just wanting, you know, equal rights for women in the same yeah. way that women fought for equal rights to vote. It's a really interesting parallel.
Yeah, that's what I find interesting as well, because one of the best things about science fiction is that you can take an issue that can be a hot topic and difficult for us to discuss if we're just talking about ourselves, and then you can put it somewhere else in another culture on another planet, and then you can talk about it and you can open up a bit more because people will be a little bit less defensive about it. Of course, in Star Trek, so often the discussion, it still centers on human beings, even though they're in our future. And so that makes it easier to talk about, but it can still be touchy. By putting it on a culture like the Ferengi, which is already so, as you said, portrayed as being bad and is so ridiculous and also does have a comedic element to it as well, I find it, especially in rewatching these episodes to get ready to talk about this today, I found it really interesting how much meaningful commentary they were able to put into these episodes that are still humorous. And it just showed that DS9 had the lobes to discuss women's rights.
Yeah, and it's really important, I think, that Deep Space Nine would be able to tackle these issues in the same way that it tackled so many other issues, whether it was religion or you know, the idea of you know, do you do the wrong thing for the right reason, and
right.
and when it comes to war and all of this. I mean, just a really fantastic track record and I think really getting to some of these issues and even trying to tackle something like, with Rejoined and the homosexual lifestyle and the repercussions right. of that too. And not necessarily that it was the fullest extent of that, but they tried, you know, and made an attempt, which in I think a better way than you know, we got on The Next Generation with some episodes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's really good. And I'm glad that, you know, it, as I don't understand necessarily the frustration with people with all of the Ferengi episodes. There's only a few that aren't my favorite. But on a whole, I really enjoy them. I think they do more for the series than they hurt.
I think it depends on how deeply you're looking at the episodes. Like, a lot of Ferengi episodes on the surface can be annoying. You know, the Ferengi are not the most likable race, I guess, for you to latch onto for a whole episode, but they really do get some meaningful commentary into those episodes. And this one with Ishka, the topic of women's rights and the way they talk about it on the show, with her earning profit, it's, I mean, of course women can work in our own society, but, you know, even today, women generally still make less money for the same job as men do. And this is just a way of, you know, just very cuttingly talking about this. And in Ferengi society, it's any profit. So at the beginning, of course, Ishka's lying about how much she made, but she says three bars of gold pressed latinum, which is not that much. And Cork doesn't even want to pay that back, because for him, it's the principal. Like if he pays it back, it's almost like he's saying that it's okay. And he sees that as compromising his values as a Ferengi. Of course, later when he finds out how much she really made, and when Rom lies to him and tells him that Mugi will give him half of the profits, well, suddenly he's okay with it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it does a long way to show just how much Ferengi are willing to put aside their rules for profit, you know, because that's really what it's all about for them. And so they'll take it any way they can get it. And then in the end, he's really not that upset necessarily about her earning the profit. I think he's a little more upset that he didn't earn any of the profit with her.
Maybe so. Well, yeah. And that actually leads into a different topic related to Ishka. And that's how the character in 5 appearances adds depth to Quark and Rom, but especially to Quark, because I feel like we get to see a side of Quark and we get to learn a bit about him, maybe what his fears are, what drives him, his history, of course, what the vision that he has of his dad, which is not accurate, and then what he learns about his mother. And these are all things that we learn about him and I think help him grow as a character that are the result of the fact that his mother is on the show and he has these episodes with her. What do you see that Ishka adds to Quark that maybe the writers would not have been able to explore if they had not introduced this character?
I think what she adds is just the way to show the softening of Quark throughout the series. And he wasn't going to completely change by the end of the series. He's still going to have a lot of Ferengi in him, but there's having his mother there and her reforms gives him the ability to have that be kind of incremental change, you know, because each time she's on, he's a little bit more giving. He's a little bit more forgiving too in the end as well. And I think that was one of the things that it's just a great job for the writers knowing, okay, we want to kind of show how this character is going to change. And one of the ways we can do that is by showing how Quark slowly kind of painfully accepts who his mother is. Even though he won't completely agree with her by the end, he still is going to be a lot more accepting of it by the end, which I thought was really interesting.
Well, I find it interesting when he will, you know, hug his mother, or his mother is kind of cradling him and rubbing his head. And it's something that I think, of course, as a child, you can see that relationship with a parent. But even as an adult, like no matter how old you get, there's always the potential where like there's something in your life that you still need the comfort of your parent. And Ishka and Rom, they were very close when Rom and Quark were kids, but Quark always bickered with Ishka. They had this tug of war and this fight, you know, and I mean, I see that myself with my own children where, you know, there are different dynamics between it, and it has a lot to do with age as well, but where there'll be times where things are smooth and then there'll be relationships, you know, like my son's a teenager now, so we get a lot of this bickering because he's branching out more. And it goes both ways between parents and the children. But I picture Quark as always feeling like he has this image, as I mentioned, of his father as being this successful businessman, where actually, as it turns out, it was his mother who was responsible for them having things because his father was terrible in business. And Quark didn't know that, and Quark bickered with his mother all this time. And so there's this weight of this sort of bad relationship with his mother that he's carrying forward through everything that he does. And what I saw in episodes where he actually sits down and talks to his mother, and when he finds out what's really going on, it's almost like that weight is lifted off of him. And as you said, that helps him soften as you go through. Because we see Ishka in season 3 in Family Business, season 5, Ferengi Love Songs, season 6, The Magnificent Ferengi, again, season 6, Prophet and Lacen, and season 7, The Dogs of War. So it's, you know, roughly once a season there from season 3 onward. We get this one touchstone there with Quark and his mother.
Well, and I think and something that we had talked about in our Literary Treks episode with Serpent Among the Ruins, kind of building things out of lie. And Quark, I think, hates his mom so much in a lot of ways, like really just frustrated with her.
Yeah.
Because his idea of his father is based on a lie.
Right.
And it's not until he knows the lie of who his father is that things begin to change. You know, he realizes that it was his mother and how smart she is and all of those kind of things. And so I think it's really neat to see that, you know, once the truth finally comes out, Quark can have a different kind of respect for his mother because that's really who it was that was behind everything. That's what he was really looking up to, was the business acumen.
Yeah.
And when he finds out his mom, it's hard to take. But at the same time, how can you not look up to as a Ferengi? You know, good lobes in business. That's what everybody wants.
Do you see anything with Rom? For me, it's a little bit less obvious with how she influences Rom, because Rom loves his mother. And Rom wants to spend time with his mother. And then there's that very awkward scene where he goes to Ferenginar. He goes in the house. His mom's wearing clothes. And she asks him, would you be more comfortable if I took the clothes off? And Rom's like, yeah, I think I would. And I'm like, no, I would not be more comfortable.
My eyes, the goggles to do nothing. Seriously, no. It is less interesting, I think, with Rom because he's always accepted who she is, you know, and he didn't care.
He doesn't have any that she had the business acumen.
Right. He has no problem with it. It's not going to affect him in any way. And so, yeah, I think with Rom, it affects him, though, in the sense that he is more willing to accept other cultures, like the Federation, more easily than his brother. He's more willing to be, he's just got a brighter heart in a lot of ways, you know. He sees things differently than his brother does. He sees things more kind of like the naivety of the Federation that Quark hates in a lot of ways. And I think that's why Quark and his brother don't get along so well.
Right. And if you go back to this in Ferengi Love Songs, where Rom is kind of grappling with those aspects of being a Ferengi because he doesn't want to lose Leda, And he finally lets go. I mean, he gives his profits to Kira to give to the war fund, the refugee fund. And he understands, especially with the help of O'Brien, that the things that Quark values in being a Ferengi, it's not the only way to go in being a Ferengi. And if you go back to that, the connection that I make with Ishka and with Zek, and the thing I want to talk about next related to the two of them, is that in the end, when Rom gets named Grand Nagus, the fact of what you just said, that he's more accepting of other cultures and of change and seeing things differently, and then what we see there, how he hangs on to Leda, and the way that Ishka thinks about things as well, wanting to change, it actually makes a lot of sense that he's the person that would be tapped to be the next Grand Nagus. Even though when it happened on the spot in first run, I thought it was a really weird story element.
Yeah, I think that it definitely is something that you can see that the writers of Deep Space Nine are saying that this society needs to change, and what it needs is somebody who stands for things that are completely different. And honestly, it was their way of reaffirming that they hope that our society becomes more like the society of the Federation and not vice versa.
Yeah.
And as much as Deep Space Nine was really about living in that tension of these values and how do you watch them play out, I think this was the writer's wish fulfillment of hoping that our society would become more like that of the 24th century Federation, and not continue to live in the light of, say, something more like the Ferengi.
Well, tying into, I just said I wanted to talk a little bit more about Ishka and Zek, and that's the fact that we find out, and Quark finds out, as we're talking about how he reacts and sort of comes to terms with what his mother's doing. She's the woman behind the curtain. She's the person who is calling the shots at the highest level of Ferengi society, because Zeki, Grand Nagus Zek, is losing his mind. He's going senile. He can't do simple math anymore or remember who we're talking about for more than 30 seconds. And he's making bad decisions, and it's actually Mugi who is helping with those decisions and is really guiding the course of Ferengi policy behind the scenes.
Yeah, it is a really interesting thing to see that it is Ishka, the one that is the woman behind the man. You know, really kind of proving, I think, that axiom, Chris, we talked about on the other side of the orb here, that behind every powerful man is a powerful woman. And here, even on Ferenginar, the axiom's still the same.
Yeah.
So you get this idea that women really do have a place in Ferengi society other than chewing food and being, you know, subservient, you know, dominated people. They have more to add to this society than just making sure that, you know, the slippers and pipe are put out for their husband when they get home.
And the tube grubs are served.
Exactly. So sufficiently chilled and pre-chewed, you know. So,
yeah.
I think it has a lot to say with just the way that societies evolve in general. You know, things that were once held dear might not necessarily be the case. You know, it comes to the crux of the issue of, okay, how do we figure out which value should stay and which value should be outdated? And that's a tough question.
Right.
A very tough question. And, you know, it shouldn't be just something that's thrown away lightly, but it is something that needs to be addressed in every society throughout all points in history.
Definitely. Now, with the Nagus, it was kind of odd that Quark's mother would get mixed up with the Grand Nagus, but the story behind it's kind of funny. So Ishka competed in the Global Tongo Championship female division in 2373, and apparently the Grand Nagus was competing as well, and she was passing him tips and helping him win, and then they started corresponding, I'll say, instead of talking, because she was pretending to be male in order to have the correspondence. So eventually she comes out and she lets him know that she's actually female. And then he's upset, but he realizes that he's in love with her. And then their relationship goes. And of course, there's the storyline of Brunt getting involved and getting Quark to help him split them apart. And Ishka's concerned, too, about what Zek might think about her. And there's a great line in one of the stories where she's concerned that he would see her as just a conniving female who couldn't keep her clothes off.
Oh, man, it's awesome.
But the way they met, it was kind of weird, but I guess it sort of makes sense. And it the fact that Zek finds out he's in love with her, brings her on, starts taking her advice and is okay with her is important in that it does show that Ferengi leadership under Zek was sort of ready for a change. And then you need to find that person who can then actually put that into action. And it turned out to be her.
Well, maybe too, in Zek's senility, is that even a word? Comes some clarity.
Yeah.
In that, you know, women really are more than just, you know, obviously in Ferengi society, they're just kind of sex objects meant for male gratification in every single way. I mean, really, they're not much different than sex slaves who also happen to raise children.
Yeah.
You know, I mean they don't have really any other purpose. That's, they don't get to wear clothes. I mean, they make sure the house is clean.
Yeah. I don't know if I equate that with sex slaves as much as just, I mean, it's like domestic servitude, which is, I know the word servitude and slavery are very similar, but I don't know. Sex slave is a very strong word for me that brings up like very specific images. And I really equated the Ferengi attitude towards women as more of just like an American 1950s, 1960s kind of housewife. You can't get out. You can't get a job. You're just going to be here to take care of the kids and take care of the husband. But taking it to an extreme when you get to things like pre-chewing the food or not being allowed to wear clothing.
Yeah, I guess I was just taking it to that nth degree. Like that.
It's implied, but...
Yeah, when you take that to its nth degree, you feel like that's what you get to.
You mean expectations, like these are services that you render to
a
husband.
Exactly, but I mean... They're just meant there to be objectified, you know, in every sense of the word.
Yeah.
You know, they can't wear clothes. They are there to make sure that the house is clean. And like I said, the pipe and slippers and the tube grubs are put out for you when you get home. And the children are taken care of and kept away from being annoying, so it really is a servanthood.
Right. Which is ludicrous.
And an objectification.
Right.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That's why it's great that they used the Ferengi for this, because of the comedic and ludicrous nature of the Ferengi. They could go to this extreme without it feeling too harsh, maybe because we're already expecting a sort of a ludicrous comedic element to the Ferengi.
Right.
Yeah. So they can put it there. And that's actually, you know, comedy with meaning. And
yes,
they use the Ferengi on the S9 to lighten the mood, but they do give us meaningful commentary through that.
Well, I think that does wonders for the sense that comedy is more than just making you laugh.
Yeah.
You know, comedy can do things that by... bringing something up that's humorous, but it also makes you think deeply about the issue once you get past the laughter. And
right.
I think that all of the episodes, and well, a majority of the episodes that we see the Ferengi and, of course, Ishka in, have something more important to say than just their base value. I will take Profit and Lace out of that because that episode has nothing to say to anyone.
Oh, come on. It's the DS9 bosom buddies.
That's the only redeeming value of it, is that it offers Trek FM an entirely big joke of bosom buddies on Star Trek.
Right. It's just too bad they couldn't get Tom Hanks to guest star and be Zek's other female financial advisor.
If that had happened, I might like the episode a little bit more.
Maybe so. All right. Well, let's talk about one last thing here with Ishka, and that's the fact that the character was portrayed by two different actresses. I don't know if the casual DS9 fan really noticed this, Now, of course, Zial was portrayed by three different actresses, and that was noticeable because you could really see her face. But the makeup for Ishka was actually done to really be more of a caricature, and it was based on Zek's makeup. And Michael Westmore actually gave it sort of this baggy, like the baggy cheeks. And there's even a scene where you see the knees, and he actually did baggy knees. So he went all out there. But because the makeup was a bit like a caricature, you didn't notice so much from an appearance aspect, the difference between the actresses. And the first appearance of Ishka was in Family Business, and the character was portrayed by comedian Andrea Martin. In every appearance after that, the four appearances after that, Ishka was portrayed by Cicely Adams. And my question to you, Matthew, is, did you really notice any difference in the portrayal? Did anything stick out for you that you said, wow, they recast Ishka?
Yeah, actually, Chris, I think this is one of the things that was so interesting, is that I didn't get a ton of difference in the portrayal of the character. I feel like that she did a lot of study to make sure that she kind of matched what had been done before. And, you know, Andrea Martin did a great job in Family Business. She was fantastic. And Cicely Adams just comes in and I think matches that so well. I don't really see much of a difference, which I think is great, because there wasn't supposed to be any difference in the character. They weren't trying to go a different way. They just, Andrea Martin, the makeup was just too much for her. She would have loved, she said, to have returned. It was so uncomfortable for her. She didn't feel like going through that process again. And
right.
So,
which is understandable. Good. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, how many times have we heard Michael Dorn talk about the process? I'm surprised Michael Dorn has skin on his face anymore with all of the prosthetic makeup he had to wear all those years. So, and the Ferengi had it really bad. I mean, they had it everywhere. I mean, especially her cheeks, everything, chin. There's nothing free on her face whatsoever.
Knees, as I just mentioned.
Knees. It's all makeup, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I didn't really notice that much difference in the character. I think if I didn't know that it was a different actress for the final four appearances, I wouldn't think about it. So I think they did a great job. It would be interesting to see how Ishka would have been in Family Business if it had been Cicely Adams from the beginning, because Andrea Martin, being a comedian, set the tone for Ishka. And then I think Adams came in and did a fantastic job of just, like you said, matching that and keeping that character all the way through. And it's possible that Ishka would have been played the same way by Adams in Family Business, but great tag team effort by the actresses here, I think, to maintain continuity in the character. Well, Matthew, any final thoughts on Ishka? I do have to point out, you do know why she was traveling to Vulcan during the Dominion War, don't you? Which, of course, got her captured.
Yeah, she was getting those lobes lifted, making sure that she was, just looking spry. And we don't know her age, but we do know that her lobes hadn't looked that good in over a century. So, it's about time to get those lobes. Yeah. So, glad she got that done, too. Beforehand, it was just too much to take. But after the lobe lift, a little bit better.
Yeah. You got to get a good lobe lift at some point.
It's very true.
On Ferenginar. So, All right. Well, any final thoughts on Mugi?
Well, Chris, I just think that, as we talked about, we've seen that it really was a worthy addition to Deep Space Nine and Star Trek, adding just a lot to the mythos of Deep Space Nine and what they were trying to do with the Ferengi in general, and taking them from those roots of the Next Generation, which were so terrible in The Last Outpost, and their laser whips and their snarling and their monkey crawl.
Speaking of that, did you notice when Mugi brings out Quark's Marauder Moe action figure? How's the laser whip?
He's got the laser whip. Yeah, fantastic. So, yeah, it is nice to see, though, that they really made something of the Ferengi. And, yeah. And so I'm glad we get these episodes. And for the most part, I enjoy watching the episodes with Iska and everything that they do with the Ferengi and with Quark and Rom specifically and that family unit because of her.
Yeah, I'm with you on all that. So, yeah, I enjoyed them too. Now, they're not the episodes that you want to throw in over and over and over and listen to
no.
Ishka's voice and Zek's laugh, but there's some good stuff in there. Well, Matthew, this was a fun little post-Mother's Day episode of The Orb. Next week, as I mentioned up front, we're going to be getting into The Changing Face of Evil, the fourth part of the final chapter, and that's going to be a deep discussion. But Moogie's not the only thing that we've been talking about here on the network this past week, so here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
DC Fontana.
The genes and everybody saw what she could do, and they allowed her to transcend the role of secretary, much as Peggy in Mad Men.
Earl Grey.
Saucer separation.
And usually it's said very dramatically, the star drive section only? What?
Like they left half the ship? Where is it?
The other half will come on Tuesday.
Could it be in a pocket dimension? I don't even know.
You left space dock without a saucer?
The Ready Room.
Coda.
Jerry Taylor wrote the book on Janeway, literally. She wrote the book on Janeway, and she reinforced that ideal and that history and even made Mosaic canon because she could. The Orb.
Imagining an Abramsverse DS9.
I feel like that would be the arc of the first season, would be, what are the wormhole aliens? Are they aliens? Are they gods? You know,
are they smoke monsters?
Are they smoke monsters? Is that them around the corner there?
Why is there a polar bear on the station?
To the journey!
Top 5 Voyager action sequences.
Of course, I want you to do your Kate Mulgrew impression of her last words in the episode.
Time's up.
That has to be your best one yet.
Oh, thank you!
Warp 5.
Romulans on Enterprise.
I think even in Kirshara, the Romulans might be thinking, like, we need to infiltrate the Vulcans. We need to bring them back to our side so we can nip this in the bud and make sure that this growing alliance doesn't happen.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Nemetric Part 1, Trek.
This is actually the one episode where I enjoy Neelix when he's being annoying. But then also, he gets a little something-something with the Klingon ladies.
Melodic Treks.
Because it is literally those two ships playing hide and seek in the nebula, but all the way through the music is there. It's keeping you rooted to what's going on, and it's just a major and integral part of what is going on the screen.
Literary Treks.
Bones chooses about being either a healer or a Starfleet officer, and he chooses in this situation to be a Starfleet officer, and it kind of
not easily.
No.
Easily.
Oh no, no, not at all.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can find our shows pretty much anywhere you get your podcasts, be that iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, BlackBerry. We're also on Swell now, which is like the Pandora for podcasts. And you can stream from our website, grab the RSS feed, put that link into your favorite podcatcher. We have Trek FM shows for you everywhere you go. And also, we have a new master feed, which you can subscribe to, that includes every episode of every show, plus some additional special audio content that's only available there in the master feed. So go check that out in iTunes, on Stitcher, and it will be turning up in other places shortly as well. If you'd like to share your thoughts with us on Moogie or anything about DS9, you can do that by going to our website at trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose The Orb, and that will come to both Matthew and me by email. You can also send us a voicemail through our website if you go to the show page, for this episode of The Orb, on our website, you'll see in the left sidebar a large item that says send voicemail. Just click that, and all you need is your webcam's microphone. Record a message for us, and you can upload it to us right there from the page. We also have forums on our website at trek.fm/forums. And in social media, we're on Twitter under username TrekFM, on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM, and we have a new community on Google+. Just search under communities for TrekFM, and you'll find our G+ community, and we'd love to talk to you there as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not hiding in Quark's closet along with the Grand Nagus, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, you can find me on MattRushing02 on the Twitter there. You can also find me doing literary treks with you. We talk about all sorts of things in the books and comics of Star Trek. We've been going through our Deep Space Nine relaunch, so you can check that out as well. And you can find me on my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, when you're not on your way to Vulcan to get that lobe lift yourself with Ishka, where can we find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username, as well as on my personal website at cbrianjones.com. And then elsewhere on the network, besides doing literary treks with you, Matthew, you can find me on Warp 5, which is all about Enterprise, Continuing Mission, which is all about fan films, and I interview the people who make them on that show. Also, Matter Stream, about science and social issues and creativity. Those are interviews as well. And then there is The Ready Room, which I host with other hosts from all around the network, including Matthew from time to time. And we talk about Star Trek news and all 5 live-action Star Trek series on that show. Also this week, we relaunched Hyper Channel as an audio show. It's about, 10 to 12 minutes long. Each day we bring you some of the top stories in the world of Star Trek, and you'll find me on there as well. Now, before we let you go, we'd also like to remind you about our sponsor for today's show, Audible.com. Audible is the best source of audiobooks that you'll find anywhere. And as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice just for trying Audible. Now, if you didn't get enough Ferengi talk today, you can get Legends of the Ferengi by Ira Stephen Bear and Robert Hewitt Wolfe, narrated by Armin Shimerman, absolutely free just for trying Audible. The way you do that is to go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up for the trial. Choose Deep Space Nine, Legends of the Ferengi, or any other book that you like, absolutely free. If at the end of the trial you decide not to stick with Audible, there's nothing to lose. You get to keep that book. But if you love podcasts, you're going to love Audible, so go try it out. audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we really thank Audible for their support of The Orb and the network.
Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.
Small. No, I think he would say he would want Moogie to remove those pants. He would feel more comfortable that way.
I need eye bleach, mind bleach. Oh, God, no.